The date is late.
But don't fear, mate.
This is Discast, episode 8.
And it's gonna be great.
For August 2006.
That's right. We are back for another episode of Discast. A bit late, but you know, we're getting good at these late releases. It is here in August, but boy, do we have a good show.
Oh yeah, we do. Coming up on today's show is many delights. I'm sure you'll all enjoy them. So here's today's plan. The world news will kick off our episode. There's quite a lot. With many events happening since the last Discast release, including, of course, the FPA Worlds 2006. Next up will be our FPA news, the usual there, all the inside story from the FPA, how you can get involved, and what's needed from you this month. Then we'll move on to our Discast interview discussion thing, where this month I sit down with new World Open Pairs champions. Yep, that's the Gauthier Bros. And we talk about everything from Hainesville.com to their new world title and to the roots of how they started playing freestyle. We'll have a Guess the Jammer update after that, and I know you're all eagerly awaiting the next clues for today. And coming up next, the return of the how-to section. Well, hey, can we have a cheer, John?
Yay!
Thank you.
Woohoo!
I'm sure you're all cheering too as well. We've got none other than world champion, I must say, Fabio Sarna, giving us the lowdown on the different ways to do self-sets. So that should be great, of course, for 8. And then we've got the Frisbee Fact delivered by me this month, and then conclusion. And we might just say goodbye at the end as well, but you'll have to wait and see.
I think we might. Well, I don't know. I'll consider it. Yep. Anyway, it's the time for the world news. Well, firstly, we're going to tell you about an advert that has been shown in South Africa. This is starring the guys from Spin Collective, and it's an advert for a company called Cell C. It has some tiny bits of basic freestyle play in the advert, but the highlights are some long throwing and catching sequences around the city, on the rooftops, which really are awesome. You can check this video out at youtube.com by searching for Spin Collective. That's two words. Spin, then collective, spelt with an F at the end.
Oh, collective, come on.
Collective. But I'm just saying it how you write it, you know.
Fair enough.
Making it easier for the listeners. Anyway, the big news story this month is that the FPA World Championships 2006 took place in Berlin, Germany. We couldn't make it, but we hope you all enjoyed the World Championships. Our sources have informed us that it was a very special tournament. It was a big success. Over 80 competitors in total, which is the most in over a decade, it must be said. We hope you enjoyed our pre-Worlds discussion with the organisers last month. Just to let you know the winners, if you don't already know, I'm sure you do. The women's pairs was won by Sarah Bergman and Mary Lowry. The open pairs was won by Jake Gauthier and Matt Gauthier, who we'll have an interview with later. The mixed pairs was won by Eleonora Imazio and Fabio Sarna of Italy. And the co-op was won by Toddy Broder, Larry Imperiali and Paul Kenny, all of the USA. Well done to all those guys, and also well done to everybody who took part.
Congratulations. Sure,
we heard you all jammed great and had an ace weekend. Also, that weekend, it was agreed that the FPA Worlds 2007 will take place next year in Amsterdam, Netherlands, on a beach just outside the city.
Oh, hey.
A similar sort of red carpet style to Rimini, we're hoping. That should be a really cool event, and hopefully the Discasters will be there.
Should be great.
Yep.
I keep saying great. That's not intentional.
No, but it does rhyme with episode 8.
Yep.
Which is great.
Go on.
2006 Jam and Go Cologne tournament took place on the 5th to the 6th of August. This was won by Larry Imperiali and Fabio Sarnet. And continuing this year's Jam and Go tour, Jam and Go Mallorca will take place on the 20th to the 22nd of October in conjunction with an ultimate tournament. If you want to take part, you must register by August the 31st. So that's, by the time most of you listen to this episode, that date may have gone, but
surely it might take a late registration over no registration. But if you do want to go, then you can, John will give you the address.
Get in touch. Yeah, it's, if you go to www.copa, that's COPA dash Pescadisco, pescadisco.com/register. The registration fee is €85, but this does include all your accommodation and meals for the 2 days, so it's not that bad, really.
Excellent.
It's a very good price. Also, quite an obvious thing, really, 2nd to the 3rd of September, the European Freestyle Championships are taking place in Rome, Italy. We will be there, along with, they're expecting 50 competitors from around Europe.
We will.
We'll be getting plenty of sound recordings to play in the next episode of Discast. Been trying to do some interviews with a lot of the jammers there. We're looking forward to that tournament already. We're getting practicing hard.
Yep.
Should be a good one.
It should be.
Also, later on, the weekend after the EFCs, the Vola Vola Frisbee Freestyle Contest will take place in Rome. If you go over to the Yahoo group, Jammers on the Net, you'll find out more. For any of you who don't know, to get onto the Access to Yahoo group, so you go on yahoo.com. One of the main tabs on the homepage is Groups. Click on this. Then search for, there's two freestyle groups, there's Jammers on the Net and Euro Freestyle. Search for both of these. Then you just have to sign up to be a member of the groups, which allows you to post and read all the messages. And then you'll get an activation thing to your email account, and it shouldn't take too long. Then you can find out if they're a great source for freestylers. Get plenty of news from them. A bit of an additional news here from ukdistyle.com, our website. That's ukdistyle.com. I'm sure you all knew that. But we have posted a highlights video from Amsterdam 2006. I think it's about 7 minutes long. It's an awesome video. There's some ace combos from the weekend, many of which we captured on video. All of them, all the best, can be seen in this highlights video.
Yep.
Some of the world's best players on show. So
it's a good video.
Enjoy
if you want
that.
To catch up from the action of Amsterdam 2006, then
it is.
Get that.
That's right. Anyway, we're moving on to the FPA news now.
Okay, the first item for our FPA news is basically a big thanks to the organisers and anyone who helped out at all, anyway, with the 2006 World Championships in Berlin. A particular thanks to Marcus Collier, who we had on the show last month, Flo, and Tommy Leitner as well, who always does a great amount of work at these tournaments. So massive thanks to anyone else whose name we haven't mentioned but has given a valuable contribution to the championships, which I'm sure there's many, many of you who have. So well done for making it such a successful event.
Well done. Elections. We mentioned this last month. FPA elections will take place for the following board positions this fall. There's Marketing Director, Treasurer and Executive Director. And the FPA are keen to have some Europeans on the board. They want more Europeans. So anyone from Europe who's interested, or you know someone who you think will be suitable, send nominations to vote@freestyledisc.org. And the FPA board would actually like to start a discussion list with one rep per country. Again, anybody interested in this, should email the FPA to let them know.
They should indeed. Now, a final item on the FPA news is just to let you all know, quite early on, about submissions for the 2007 FPA Disc Design Competition. Submissions for this are now being accepted, and if you're a talented designer and would like to come up with something for the FPA's 07 SkySailor, then get working on them now and send them in as soon as possible. So just to let you know about that, start figuring out what you might want to design. If you've always seen discs and thought, oh, I could design the perfect SkySailor, then why not take that claim and give it a go?
Yeah, well,
so get designing.
I'm just debating whether I should enter or not, Joe, because I do actually want to give other people a chance, you see. So, but I think I might have a go.
I would. Yeah, it might be slightly unfair, of course. I think it
would, wouldn't it?
To dominate the opposition.
Anyway, it's time for the segment you've all been waiting for this month.
Da, da, da.
It's a big exclusive. It's an interview with the current world freestyle champions, the new world champions, the first time they've won. It's the Gauthier brothers from the USA, open pairs world champions. This is an exclusive interview, the first one they've done since winning the world championships.
It is indeed. So here is the Gauthier brothers talking to me about their take on freestyle. Take it away, guys. Okay, welcome listeners to our Discast discussion for episode 8. And this month, I'm joined by Matt and Jake Gauthier. Of course, the current world champions. So, welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going good.
Yeah.
Feel great after winning the title. Yes.
Excellent. I've got plenty of questions for you. Unfortunately, John can't be around for today's recording. Who knows? Maybe he's sleeping because it is 5:26 a.m. in the morning here. But we'll get straight into the interview anyway. Okay, firstly, guys, how and when did you each get into the sport? Did you discover it together, or did one of you kind of lead the other into freestyle?
Well, I kind of led Matt, but I think Matt had an earlier experience that he'll tell you about in a second. But let me tell you about how I started. So I had a friend who was working at a dental lab called Mike's Hill Dental Lab for a guy named Mike Esterbrook. And Mike Esterbrook was a jammer, so he brought my friend out to jam. And they jammed for a little while, and then my friend Dave said, "Okay, Jake, you just got to do this. This is the greatest thing." And I'm telling him, you know, I like to throw frisbees, but spinning on my finger, I don't know anything about that. It doesn't sound like fun to me. So we argued about it for a while, and eventually he twisted my arm, and he got me to come out there. And the first time that disc hit my finger and just went around and around on the rim, I was hooked. That was it. And so probably a month later, I roped Matt into it, and we've been jamming together ever since.
Excellent. Yeah,
my experience was the first time I ever saw freestyle was in the fourth grade, I think. It was either the fourth or the fifth grade, and there was a lunchtime. Right. What's that?
So around about what age would that be, Matt?
10 or 11 years old.
Right.
I saw it, and Tom Leitner came and did a demo at my school.
Cool.
And I didn't know it was Tom Leitner at the time. I discovered that later. I was staying at his house one day, and he's like, "Oh, I used to do these demos up and down at schools. And then he told me, you know, we just discovered on accident. I'm like, "Hey, you're the guy who inspired me." So I saw it when I was 10 years old, and I went, oh, that's what I have to do with my life. So I immediately went home and got a disc and tried, "Jake, we have to go throw a frisbee." And then I tried to learn how to tip and delay, and I couldn't figure it out. And then I kind of gave up on it, and Jake eventually came along and said, "You have to do this thing." And I was into playing drums at the time, being a musician. So I was like, "Well, whatever. I want to play the drums." And I went and played a little bit and didn't like it. and, you know, was still kind of into the drums. And then Jake kept twisting my arm, you got to do this, you got to do this. And one day he threw this really beat up pink disc to me, and I could delay it. It like had all this dust on it and a big crack in the middle. And somehow, for some reason, you know, not ever doing anything, I could spin it on my finger, and that same feeling of when I was 10, like, oh, that's right, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. And then I haven't been able to put it down ever since.
Excellent.
Wow, that's so cool. I totally forgot about that old pink disc, too. I played with that thing for months and months and months with a huge crack in the middle, because that's all that I knew. That's hilarious.
I still have that disc in the storage. Yeah, it's all moldy.
Do you really? That's great. So I was 20 when I started, and it was 1995.
I was 16.
So you mentioned there, Matt, that Tom Leitner was the guy who inspired you, even though you didn't really know it at the time. So who else were your early mentors or role models?
That has to be Mike Esterbrook and Jimmy Zuhr.
Right.
Mike Esterbrook was, you know, he was the guy who showed Jake originally and showed me as well. And he had a pretty good skill set. He could do a lot of moves, and he had taken second and later first place in the Grand Masters freestyle championships, which seemed pretty exciting to us, you know. So it was like, oh, we're
Definitely.
Learning from this semi-famous guy, and so that was really cool. And a lot of the stuff that he did seemed really accessible to your eyes, you know. Sometimes you watch some people who have been playing for a lot of years, and you go, I don't have any idea how anybody could do anything like that.
Yep, yep.
And people who don't have quite the you know, the same level of against and spins and stuff, it makes it a little easier to pick up on.
Yep, yeah, that's true. One of the things with freestyle is trying not to to chain anything down to say that this is how anything's done, but how would you each, if you would each, describe or define your individual styles of play?
That's a tough question. I don't know. Huh. So I think I would define my style. Yeah, I have to think about that. I think my style, there's a couple things. I think one of the things in my style is that I'm very relaxed when I play. And I think, you know, I watch a lot of other people play, and they're really explosive, and they're really exciting, and they're really on the edge. And when I watch myself play in videos, mm-hmm. I seem just kind of bored and kind of relaxed, like, ho-hum, what's going to happen next? It's not really a big deal. And I don't know, I just kind of exude this sort of lackluster, whatever type of emotion, I think. But in terms of what's important to me when I play, the most important thing to me is being able to pass with people. I hate getting in jams when everyone's doing their own individual combos over and over. I mean, individual combos are great, and people should do them, but you got to do them when the time is right. And otherwise, you got to pass, and you got to bring in your friends, and you got to really try to add to the jam. Because to me, when you bring that mob-op mentality onto the field, you end up creating this bond between all the people who are on the field with you, and this energy, and you can feel it ebb and flow as the moves work, and then the moves don't work, and the energy kind of dies. And then the moves work, and the energy just builds, and you just totally bond with everybody. And that's how I would define how Frisbee feels for me and my style of play, is all about passing and co-oping and mob-upping and trying to add not just to myself, but to everybody else around me as I play.
Excellent, yeah. True jam spirit there. okay, so Matt, anything you would say is like a trademark to you?
Wow. I don't know what to say my style is like.
It's okay.
That's kind of a hard question, because I don't know why. Because that's just... I don't know. I watch video and I think, oh, I wish my style was like Chip Bell. Or I wish my style was like Dave Schiller. Or there's a lot of ideals that I set for my own self as a player, and I don't know that I really attain any of when I play. Sometimes I crash and burn. That's kind of fun. I don't know what my style is exactly, but I have to get on board with Jake saying that passing is good. I like passing a lot. I think that, you know, it's fun to do indies, and I think, you know, when I do indies, I probably generally do them when I jam by myself.
Yep.
And otherwise, I want to pass and go off and hoop. I want to hoop the guys, somebody's catch, the guy or girl's catch. You know, I want to be somebody who's making the jam that much more exciting, because I don't know, I don't have that many moves. I've got a couple, but nothing as good as hooping or leg opening.
Okay, thanks for that. Now moving on to your kind of both your involvement and sort of contributions to the sport, starting with, of course, Hinesville.com. What compelled you guys to set up a site such as this?
Oh, that's an easy question. So, when Matt and I were, probably 5 years ago or 4 years ago, we were jamming and we were noticing that everyone around us is a lot older than we are, and pretty soon we figured out that all these people are going to get too old to jam with us, and it's just going to be the two of us, and that's going to really suck, because we like jamming with other people. So, my whole goal for Hinesville, and Matt's whole goal for Hinesville too, was to try to figure out how you take away that learning curve for new jammers, because to me, what really keeps people out of this sport that's so great is that it's really, really hard to pick it up. You have to be dedicated just to learn the nail delay. You have to really want it.
Yeah, you do. I was talking to Matt before. He was asking me how many people in our area do we manage to get started, and I was saying that it is really hard to just get past that first phase of the nail delay.
Totally. And so that's why I put that site together, was to try to try to figure out how can I make the learning curve a little less steep so that maybe people will get more interested and want to play. And that was the same thing with the whiz rings. When I figured out the whiz rings made airbrushing so easy, that was just that fit right along the same lines.
Yeah. Excellent. I should mention here that I love the random app homepage with all the different, you know, philosophy and bits about the sport on there. I think that's cool.
Thanks.
It's unique. I like it. Okay, I want to talk about high nails now. Are these just something you do, Matt, or are JQ involved as well?
Occasionally, when there's a high level of production that needs to happen, I get people involved like Jake, but generally speaking, I'm the guy who does them.
Okay, cool. So, so when you started making nails, Matt, did you have in mind when you first started making them that you'd... you know, you'd eventually have a widespread audience for your nails, or did you just make them for yourself?
I made them for myself originally. I made them, and they were pretty crude in the beginning. They were just, you know, they were acrylic, but they were, you know, they were poorly shaped and not very well polished. Yeah. And I made them for myself, and then, you know, every now and again somebody would say, hey, can I try some of those nails? And eventually, I started getting good at making them, so, you know, more and more people started wanting them, and eventually I realized that I had to start selling them, because I was spending so much time after work at work trying to make nails.
Right.
And you got to give credit to Mike Easterbrook for teaching you how to
do that. Oh, that's true.
Right?
Absolutely. Mike Easterbrook Mike Easterbrook is the reason, A, that I'm a dental technician, which is my current profession, and B, is why I learned how to make nails, because he's the one who showed us. He said, here, plop it on your finger, and, you know, showed us the process of making nails.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've taken that process and changed it a little bit, but it's still, you know, it's still the same idea, the same material, same stuff.
Oh, cool. For those listeners who... and not aware at the moment, Matt's high nails are commonly regarded as some of the best around, eh, Matt? And plenty of freestyles from around the world play with them. Okay, let's talk about your tournament now, Superhine. It's an extremely interesting and a unique tournament, because as well as having the open pairs division, which I think runs as standard, there's also the turbo shred and the mob opposite divisions.
Uh-huh.
So could you explain for listeners what exactly these separate divisions are?
Yeah. Would you like to field this, Jake, or should I?
I'll do it if you want.
Okay.
So open pairs is pretty standard. I think everyone knows what that is. But one thing that's different in the Super Hane is that we try to make it a little shorter than the normal competitions. Right. And the reason for that is because we're trying to be spectator-friendly.
Okay,
so
cool.
So then the... Turbo Shred, part of the competition. The whole concept behind that is difficulty and consecutivity and doing your hardest move. So it's something that's supposed to be really easy for the audience to understand. So you end up going out on the field, and you can choose any person that you want to throw for you. And then you get a throw, and you basically get three chances to do your hardest move. And then there's a couple of little intricate rules, like if you get a throw and it's not a good throw, you can balk on it. You don't have to take it. So you can basically grab out of the air or just let it hit the ground and say, I don't want that one. So you're guaranteed that you get a good throw. And then you have what's called a mulligan, which means if you touch the disc once and then you decide that it's not what you want, you can call a mulligan, and you can do that one time. So the theory behind that is if you get the perfect throw, you can try to go for your quadruple spinning Gaitosis pullout. And if you miss it, well, then you just call a mulligan and you try again. So you don't actually lose that throw. So it's trying to inspire people to go really big off the throw.
All right.
Okay. So that's the individual, the Turbo Shred. And then the Mob Op division, the theory behind that is we wanted to capture the spirit of a regular freestyle tournament after the tournament's over. I don't know if you've experienced this, but I experience this all the time. Tournament's over, and everybody just storms the field, and you mob up for hours and hours. It's like, finally, tournament's over, and now we can just go have fun and play together, and it's great.
And so what
we wanted to do was take that spirit and turn it into a competition format so that we could capture more aspects of what freestyle is about. So in the mob-up division, people play, at least the original concept was that we would have multiple discs on the field with multiple jammers, and you run out there and you pick any mob-up you want to be in, and if you're in a mob-up that doesn't work, you switch to another mob-up. And you basically try to find the place that is the best jam for you. But the goal of the mob-up is very different from the other two divisions, because your goal there is not to shine yourself, but to make the whole group shine. So you get judged on how well you can hoop and leg over and pass to somebody and make the adjustment when it needs to happen and basically raise the energy in that jam.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's interesting. So it's judged individually, but the judging's based on jamming qualities, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah, and part of the thing that I've really thought was really cool about the Mob Op is that it also tries to capture the spontaneity of jamming. Because when you have pairs or when you have Turbo Shred, you can go, okay, I'm going to do move X in Turbo Shred because I know that's the number 9. I know if I hit this move, I'm going to get a 9 on the sheet and I'm going to go home, you know, in the top 3 or whatever. Yeah, and in the pairs, you go, okay, you know, we're choreographed to music and we have our whole thing that we've set up for the music, but in Mob Op, there's no choice. It's random music, it's random people, and you just get to go out there and see, you know, how can I make you better? You know, how do I make this person better? And then, you know, you get to see the magic happen those times, and you go, oh my gosh, I've never seen the double hoop to the kick under the leg. I've never seen that before.
Yeah,
it's a very cool. The Mob Op is very cool. It's a little bit hard to judge, but very fun. Fun to watch and fun to play in, for sure.
Yeah, sounds great. So were these divisions, the Turbo Shred and Mob Op, was this something that you two came up with as an idea for new tournament styles, or had it been done before? And why did you want to include them, if so?
Turbo Shred came from Arthur Coddington originally.
Okay, cool.
He came up with the idea of trying to make a single move format, and we kind of saw that. I think we did some group jam with some people in Seattle that we did some spontaneous Turbo Shred one time, and went, oh, this is kind of cool. But the idea behind the Super Hane, I think, overall, was that in America, you know, it seems like it's different in Europe, but in the United States, it's not very spectator friendly, the pairs format that happens now FPA. It's a little bit long, and people will show up for one or two routines, but then they go, oh well, you know, I don't know, there's too much time in between, too many, you know, it all looks the same, it's hard to identify, you know. That was it all kind of, you know, it kind of spawns from the idea of Hanesville, you know, the website, because that the idea there obviously was to encourage people to play and get people to be able to learn how to play. I mean, for me, the Hanesville was about or Hanesville.com is about, you know, I wanted to learn how to play when I was 10 and I had no resources. There was nothing out there. There was no way for me to, I didn't know, I couldn't find a book, I couldn't find anybody who could show me how to play. Yeah. So that makes Hanesville, the idea for me was like, oh, we got to put something out there so if people look it up on the internet, they can learn. And that's sort of the same thing for the spectators. When the spectators come up, you want them to be able to see the process and not get turned off by it because it's just a bunch of mumbo jumbo with a disc.
Definitely, yeah. The spectator-friendly tournament, it would definitely help to gather people into the game, I think.
Yeah, that was our goal, anyways.
Yeah, sounds cool. So, does Superhain have a future? Has there been or is there going to be a Superhain 06?
06. We are in 06 now. There's not going to be one in 06, but I think there's going to be one next year. I have to make a couple of calls. But
07, cool.
Assuming that my contacts are still into doing it, we'll be having it again this winter.
Excellent, cool. Now, sort of continuing from the tournament theme, let's discuss your own tournament play. And, okay, firstly, you clearly play very well together as a team. Now, do you think that your relationship being brothers has helped you with this? Natural teamwork, intuition at all?
I think it has. I think being brothers has helped a little bit, but what I think helps more is just the fact that we play together all the time. And that we jam together, and that we learned from the same people. So we both have sort of these roots in the Mike Esterbrook, Jimmy Zuer, and the Santa Cruz, Skippy Jammer, Tommy Leitner style. And also that we both like the same thing. We want to pass. So when we jam together, even one-on-one, we pass and we pass and we pass. So pretty soon when I watch Matt do a move, I know what's going to happen next. I know when he's going to pass it to me, and I know where to be so that I can receive the pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, every now and again I trick him, though.
Well, that's the fun part, is trying to jam together and figure out how to trick each other. I like to do that, too. Totally. We'll be playing, and all of a sudden, poof, it'll just come right at my feet. I got to go, okay, I got to catch that now. It's pretty fun.
Cool. You can also, obviously, put together some great routine play. Notably, winning the Routine of the Year award in the Jammy 2005 for your co-op with Randy Silvey at 2005 FPA Worlds. Now, what in your view, guys, makes that really special routine?
Well, I think first you have to give a lot of credit to Randy Silvey because he's got a certain quality about how he puts a routine together, and his theatrical abilities are pretty amazing. He was actually a theater guy for a long time, and he brings some of that experience in with trying to put a routine together with music.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. And
I've heard a few people say that he's the most creative guy in the sport. I think Dave Lewis said that when he was on here. Yeah.
Oh, did he? Yeah. I would agree with that assessment. Randy is really, really creative, and love watching his routines, and having worked with him for a couple of years, I've learned so much about putting routines together. And I'm pretty much of the Randy school of thought for putting routines together. I try to follow his format with every routine I've done since. So
yeah, that's a good format.
But the cool thing about that 2005 routine with Randy, what I think made it work so well is it just came together like magic. The three of us got together in a gym, and 4 hours later, we walked out and we had a whole routine. It just boom, 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 boom. Everything just happened, and it was super, super cool. And when it works that way, you know it's going to be good, I think.
Yeah, I pretty much have to agree with that assessment. That's what happened. It was magical. We walked in there and we thought, okay, well, we're going to block out. We'll block out a minute, and we'll still have 4 minutes left, and we'll get this over the course of a weekend or a couple of weekends. And we just, 4 hours, every move came next, and like the music guided what we were going to do, and it was really obvious every time. It's like, oh, this is the next move. This is where this catch needs to go. This is where this pull to your hoop, to this pull, to, oh, and I can do that back roll. How about that? It was great. It was a really intense and fun experience putting that routine together.
Very cool. Okay, so now the big one, FPA Worlds 2006. So firstly, how did you approach the tournament? How much practicing together did you do in the lead up to it?
That's a funny question. This year, so last year we practiced over and over and over. We practiced every time we jammed. We would practice probably for 30 minutes after the jam. So we had, I don't know, 80 hours at least, you think, maybe more than that last year.
Yeah, we had a lot of hours. We got the routine together early too. We put it together way early in the season and just started banging up against it, trying to you know, get the ins and outs of it so that we'd have everything dialed.
And so this year, we procrastinated. We pretty much waited to the last second. Well, not literally the last second, but it was, you know, a couple months before the tournament. And we said, okay, you know, we really need to work on this. So we went to the park and we were just totally hitting a roadblock. We couldn't get anywhere. And then all of a sudden, poof, we put together like a minute and a half.
In 30 seconds.
It was crazy. Never experienced that before. But it was really weird because we did it without the disc, and we didn't know exactly what the moves were going to be, but we knew where we were going to be on the field and how we would position ourselves and how the energy would flow through the routine. So then we got together the next weekend, and the exact same thing happened. We hit a roadblock for like 2 hours, and we couldn't come up with anything. And then all of a sudden, poof, it just sort of all fell into place kind of the same way. And so then we practiced, I don't know, we practiced like 6 or 7 times, and that was about it. And you know, we talked to each other and we're like, well, if we win, we win, and if we don't, we don't. Let's not take it too serious this year. We know the routine. We're either going to hit it or we won't. And I think that attitude worked.
Yeah, I think it did, yeah. So it can be hard to say this about yourself, but what was it, do you think, about your finals routine that would have really impressed the judges and stood out from the rest?
Jake did like 5 against skids in one move, and I heard the judges go, "That was 5 against skids," and that's when I knew that we were doing good. Like, and that was at the end of the routine, so I was like, "Okay, I think that was good." And I knew I had to do something hot. And I don't think that I didn't really do 5 against skids or anything. But I did a combo, and then the routine was all of a sudden over, and Jake looked at me and said, "One drop." And that's what it was. It was the 5 skids.
Was it?
You think it was the 5 skids? That's great. I'll accept that. That sounds good to me.
Okay, cool. So finally, hey guys, how did it feel to win, and how does it now feel to be world champions?
It is incredible. It's still a little surreal, and it's incredible, and sort of I'm still the same jammer that I was before. I don't know how I'm different, so I don't know. It's kind of strange, but I think, you know, for me, winning wasn't really the sweetest thing. I think performing as well as we did was the sweetest thing, because I have a completely new level of confidence in routines and just in a jam than I had before that tournament. And it all came from walking off the field and feeling like, wow, we did exactly what we came to do. After 10 years of trying, we just did it, and this is great.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty true. You know, if we had a lost, it would have been okay too, because we hit the routine like it was planned. Every single bit of it was just. I think there may have been always in a routine, there's a couple spots that don't go quite like you plan. But I mean, they didn't go bad. They went like, oh, we just made the adjustment, and it was just the whole thing was super hot, and that's what feels good. I mean, if you can do that, for me, anyways, if you can do that in any round. In any routine, that's pretty satisfying, because you don't always get to do that. Sometimes you do your routine, and all 3 times it doesn't quite feel like, well, it wasn't quite what we planned, but it was, you know, it was close. We didn't drop too many, but this year I felt really fortunate. I had, I think two of my routines this year, I had that experience. I know Jake had that experience with Cindy in the semis.
Very cool, yeah.
Just where you hit the routine, and you get to go, oh, that's what we meant to do, and that felt good.
It all came together. Okay, well, I think that just about wraps up our Discast discussion here with Matt, and our Discast interview, really, with Matt and Jake Gauthier. So thanks a lot, guys, for joining me for this month's show. It's been great to have you on.
You are welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us. That was great.
Okay, good stuff.
Thanks again, guys. We hope you all enjoyed that interview. Great insight into their careers, their website, all the stuff they do, and of course their recent victory at the Worlds.
Yep.
And now it's time for the Guess the Jammer competition, the podcasting world's most popular competition, which has received 2 votes in its history. But
actually, 3 it has.
Three. Yeah. I stand corrected.
Come on, guys, let's have some votes for Guess the Jammer.
Come
on. We don't want to make it too easy for everyone else. Okay, no. So this month's jammer is... Oh.
Don't say who it is.
Yeah, we give you clues.
The first clue. This jammer is otherwise known as Miss Muffet.
Okay. This jammer is also a 4-time women's world champion.
And the last clue. She is a Seattle-based jammer.
Okay, so there are clues. So get thinking, get researching. Enter, of course. And you'll have a fantastic prize awaiting you in a prize draw later on this year. We'll of course be a discast frisbee related prize, and believe us, it will be worth waiting for.
It will, and it'll be worth entering to definitely have your chance of winning.
Definitely, get involved. Okay, now we're going to move on and have Fabio Sauna's how-to section on self-sets. It's a great overall guide, particularly focusing on the counter self-set, the thumber, isn't that right, John?
Yep, the self-set which Fabio himself is an expert at, really, that thumber self-set. But all of the sets as well, he'll talk you through. It's an essential part of individual freestyle development.
Any beginners that you know that are looking to try and work on their delays, then you can whatever spin they are, you can play them this brilliant segment.
Yep, and that's true, because we all have to jam and practice on our own, so self sets really are a vital part of that.
They are,
to give us as much Z's as possible. Anyway, Fabio, let's hit us with it.
Hello guys, today I would like to explain you the self-set. Let's start with the basic one. The self-set with both hands. Probably it's one of the easiest self-set if you start alone. Take the disc at eye level, holding it with both hands on the outside rim. Remember not to put the thumb inside the rim. Let's suppose you want to self-set yourself with a clock spin. So, twist the disc for about 90 degrees counterclockwise. At this point, you should have your left hand at mouth level. Now twist again clockwise, releasing the disc above your head. You should try to push up the disc, but not too high, just about 0.5 meter. Don't go immediately for the delay. Just try this self-set for 10 or 20 times, till you've got an horizontal self-set and the disc coming back to the same spot. Naturally, for starting with counter, you should just switch position. So you should prepare the set going clock and then releasing counterclockwise. Once you feel comfortable with the set, you can try to focus on the delay. If these are your first delays attempts, then try to hold the disc above your head. But let's continue with the second self-set. Now we will try the backhand self-set with one hand. So before this, you should be able to throw a normal backhand. Let's suppose again you want to put some clock spin on the disc. So take the disc with your right hand in backhand position. This time you need also to focus on your body. Put the right foot on the front and the left foot on the back, as you should form a 45 degrees angle. Then put your right hand with the disc over your left hip. This will be the starting position for the self-set. From here you should try to snap the disc as much as you can. You should try to compensate the release energy with the snap energy, so that the disc won't fly away from you but will stay very close. In this case you will have less time to react, and then going for the delay. Naturally, for a counter spin, you will use your left hand. My suggestion will be, as always, try to learn both spins and self-setting with both hands. In this way you will complete your skills. Always think in advance what kind of player I will meet. Counter player or a clock player, you never know. If you will learn both, you will be ready in any case, and you will give your playing partner whatever spin he wants. But now let's go back with the self-sets. After you've learned the first two self-sets, you will notice that the spin is not as strong as a normal throw. And maybe you'll ask yourself, as I did, is there any way to put more spin on the disc with a self-set? The answer is yes, naturally, and comes from an advanced throw called thumber, also known as helicopter. Mastering this throw is not so easy, but with patience and practice, you can do it. Okay, let's suppose you want to put a counterspin on the disc. Grab the disc with your right hand, thumber inside the rim, the other four fingers outside the rim. Try to make contact with the disc on your forearm. The hand should remember the hijacking position. At this point, think about being a discobolus. So bend your knees, bend your right arm, and hold it firm below your right shoulder. Your right foot should be on the back and the left foot should be on the front. Put all your weight on your right leg and bring the disc close to your right ear. To get an idea of the position, try to think to be a baseball player preparing to throw the ball. The only difference is that you will release the disc not in front of you but above you. So from that position, in a wave movement, try to twist all your body, from the toes, to the hips, to the shoulders, to the wrist, to the thumb. In the very last moment when you are releasing the disc, try to push up, but beware not to fully extend your elbow. It could comport to injure your joint. What I usually suggest to all the players who start to try this throw, don't be anxious to put a lot of spin on the disc. Try to do it slow motion, just very relaxed, and try to get an horizontal disc before starting to twist a lot your wrist and your thumb. One of the most common mistakes in this throw when you first begin is that you don't snap back. That's why you should try to be very loose and make a full rotation around the rim of the disc. If you succeed in having a quite good Z's out of this throw when you self-set to yourself, but you still don't understand how to put a lot of Z's on it, the key factor is the thumb. That's why they call it the thumber. To do this, you should be able to press the thumb on your index finger in the very last moment when you are snapping back. To conclude, I could say that the thumber is a very complex movement, but I won't say it's difficult. Some people get it naturally, some people can't get it very easily. I remember I got it in 1 month with good precision and a nice seize on it. The thumb throw is very cool because you can get on a horizontal disc with a lot of spin, so you don't need to get on the rim before going to a center control. And I personally think that is one of the best self-set solutions. I hope you enjoyed the explanation. And if you find difficulties, you can contact me by email or asking me to show you when we meet in some freestyle event. Keep jamming both spins any angle and see you around, guys.
Okay, thanks very much, Fabio. That was great.
Thank you.
Very professionally done.
Indeed.
And I hope you all enjoyed that and learned from it, of course. Okay.
And now it's time for our fun segment of the month, which we always have, and it's very popular segment, we know you'll enjoy it. It's a frisbee fact of the month. And this year,
it's
Joe is going to blow us...
It's that time of the month already.
It is. This time, Joe is going to blow us away with one. Go on, Joe. I do not remember, everyone. I do not know what this is.
Remember?
No idea.
So
remember.
John's exaggerated shock is completely real.
Yep.
This is amazing fact when it comes. Okay, so I've been researching this fact for a while now, and I think I've just about gathered just enough information to give you a good lowdown. What I'm going to give you the fact about this month is a new gadget, a frisbee-related gadget, obviously. Now,
does it fly?
It does fly, yes.
Oh.
Now, what this is it's a crazy frisbee camera. Okay. This was reported recently by a top UK gadget magazine. In fact, they claim to be the world's number one gadget magazine.
Oh, we'll see about that.
And the tagline to the headline is, "We don't make a habit of throwing our cameras about the place, but this one's designed to let you do just that." Now what it is it's a camera that's designed by a guy called Adam Sutcliffe, who's a graduate from the British Royal College of Art. And he's designed something that he's calling the Kooky Catchu camera. And what this is basically a camera that comes kind of interwoven into a frisbee. It's sort of the main bulk of the camera sits underneath the frisbee, and then there's a little bit that pokes out the top. So you can chuck it away and record up to 20 minutes of broadcast quality video as the frisbee flies. Not that it'll stay in the air that long, of course.
No.
Now, using a kind of mini hard drive type memory, and also quite a solid design, the Catchu, which is spelled CATCHU, is built to take inevitable knocks when it comes crashing back down to Earth. And also it has a nifty little feature, which is a smart wind vane on the top of the Frisbee, which keeps the camera facing in one direction while the Frisbee is spinning through the air.
I was going to ask.
Otherwise, you could encounter problems when the Frisbee just rotates really fast, you know, particularly if you've got someone like Tom Leitner throwing it with extreme ease. So
the camera
that won't give you great footage. But it's got this smart wind vane that, using air resistance, managed to keeps the Frisbee in place.
But now, would the wind vane be able to handle a Tom Leitner throw?
That's a good question indeed, and I think Adam Sutcliffe should get in touch with Tom maybe to test it out.
And
the thing is about this, though, it's a small up and coming gadget development, and there's some 3D images online, and it's a smart idea, of course, but we've no idea actually when it will be available to buy, when it will be in full production. Now, Adam reckons it'll cost about £45 when it finally flies into stores around the UK and hopefully around the US as well. So,
I think I'll be buying one.
So it should be cool and should be semi-affordable. So that's a gadget, and if we get any more news on that, I'm sure the freestyle world will know. But it's looks pretty cool.
That's very good facts. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
What's it called? The Catchu.
The Catchu, yeah.
Wicked.
CATCHU. It sounds
awesome.
Kind of Japanese.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
Well, that with that quite exciting and incredible piece of news, we end Discast Episode 8.
We do. We've reached the end.
It has been great.
Yep. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have.
Indeed.
It's a good length episode that we've got back on track with the how-to and things. Go for it.
What?
Just say, "I'm John Coxhead again."
I'm John Coxhead again.
And I'm Joe McRae.
Right. See you all next month.